It's a busy Monday morning. Margaret Fetty is out sick. That's why you don't hear her voice. But we keep things moving right along. And our good friend checking in with us this morning from the Indiana Chamber is the president and CEO, Kevin Brinegar, joins us. Kevin, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Enjoying this warm-up we're having here.
Yeah, it's nice. And, it could have a little bit of rain, but that's what turns everything green, like your grass, like your flowers, like your plants. But a true sign of things turning is the temperature, so that must mean we're getting deeper into April, which means the Indiana legislative session is going to rapidly come to an end. Tell us where we're at in the timeline and what you've noticed here over the last couple of weeks.
Certainly. Last Thursday was the deadline for bills to pass the second house. Any bill that did not do that is now dead. And we're into what we call final jeopardy in the state house, which is the conference committee period. The legislature has 2 weeks to work out any differences between the House passed version of a bill and the Senate passed version. And so particularly major bills like the budget, the transportation infrastructure, there are a lot of differences in the two versions. And they have a compressed period of time because by statute they have till April 29th. But they've already announced that they're going to adjourn around April 21st, so a week from Friday, in part because there's a big international firefighters convention coming to Indianapolis, and the legislators have been kicked out of their hotel rooms that last week of April. So they said, well, we better get our work done a little earlier than traditional. So this is going to be a very intense period of time. A conference committee meeting has already been scheduled on the transportation infrastructure bill, House Bill 1002, and one has also been scheduled for the budget on Wednesday for this week, or maybe it's tomorrow. I know they're back-to-back, so it must be tomorrow. So they're going to be off and running. They've got a lot of important bills to negotiate, and some pretty big differences, more so than has been the case in recent years. So somebody's going to have to blink. Some compromises are going to have to be made. But I am very certain that they will finish on time. They won't spill over and need a special session, in part because you've got the same party controlling the House, the Senate, and the governor's office, and it would be embarrassing if people of one party couldn't get along and get things done. So big important bills, the budget, transportation infrastructure, replacing the ISTEP, deciding whether the state superintendent for public instruction is going to be appointed or not. The pre-kindergarten funding bill and how that program is expanded and to the extent to which it expanded, that's still to be determined, as well as some bills with respect to technology and innovation. There's an energy bill that has passed both houses. We're hearing that Senator Hirschman, who's the author of the bill, will agree to the changes that the House made and file a concurrence motion, which means the bill won't have to go to conference committee.
And when we have all these bills lining up, as you mentioned, you're talking about the politicking that goes on to make it happen. When there's one when there's one party in charge, do you feel this should be moving quicker, or is this about the pace you expected?
This is the normal pace. What you don't have is the likelihood of a special session where one, which has happened over the years, my many years around the State House, where they just can't agree on certain things, budgets in particular, typically, and then it spills over and the governor has to call a special session. And I know in the late 80s, early 90s, when the Democrats controlled the House and the Republicans controlled the Senate and you had a Democrat governor, there were literally several years in a row where they had to have special sessions to wrap things up. And sometimes it was over redistricting, sometimes it was over budgets. You just don't see that when one party or the other controls all three places.
Kevin Brinegar is our guest this morning, president and CEO of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. Obviously, the budget bill is huge because it ties in so many things. Where is this moving in the right direction? Are there pieces of it that you still scratch your head and say, I'm not sure if that's the best way forward? Give me your thoughts on that.
Well, we're pleased in the general sense that this budget is balanced. It does not spend more than the revenue forecast takes in, and we're going to get a new revenue forecast this week, either Tuesday or Wednesday, and that will set the parameters for the final budget negotiations. And we have a good consensus forecasting process that everyone uses to decide what money will be available to be budgeted. The budget overall is in pretty good shape, with the big items really relate to transportation infrastructure and how that's going to be structured, and whether or not there's going to be tolling, whether or not the sales tax on gasoline is going to be transferred over and used for roads and then backfilled with a cigarette tax increase, which is the approach the House used. The Senate didn't do that, and their bill that provides less overall money, about $650 million a year in new revenue for roads. The House version was over $1 billion in new money, and that's important for not only maintaining our roads, but also finishing and initiating new projects like I-69, finishing that section from Martinsville to Indianapolis, which currently is not funded, as well as expanding lanes on I-65 and I-70 from 4 lanes to 6 lanes to relieve the immense congestion that is occurring and the accidents that occur when you've got so many cars and so many trucks crammed into one highway.
And I know you're not a transportation expert per se, but do we wake up one morning and all of a sudden the roads were bad? It just seems like this is a new hot button top. Did we just let it? Do we ignore it? How did we get to this spot? Or am I over dramatizing this a little bit?
Well, we've been actually working on trying to make the case for this for several years. We pushed through legislation 3 years ago that said we need to study our funding options, because we knew from NDOT providing information every year that we were falling further and further behind on the maintenance. And NDOT projects that they're receiving about $900 million a year less than what they really need to keep the existing roads and bridges up to par and not lose ground on that. So this is not new, but when you talk about raising revenues to address these problems, sometimes it has to get to a critical point before legislators are willing to bite the bullet and make that tax increase vote. Now, the interesting thing is we're really dealing, as I think I mentioned in a previous visit with you, with the impact of technology
right
on our road funding, because we tax the fuel source predominantly, gasoline and diesel fuel, and we've got cars and trucks going much, much farther on a gallon of gasoline and a gallon of diesel fuel than they did 10 years ago or 20 years ago. So the revenue per mile driven has gone down. Plus, we have vehicles that don't even drive on gasoline or diesel fuel, electric cars, trucks that run on natural gas. And so our revenues have been eroded. We're actually taking in less money last year than we did 10 years earlier. And so we have to make up for that because we've lost about 25% of the purchasing power of our gasoline tax revenue since the last time that rate was raised, and we've lost over 50% since 1988 when the diesel tax was last increased.
Well, that makes sense because
so it's time.
Yeah, the usage is
past time.
The roads are being used. The wear and tear continues on all that. Mm-hmm. When people listening to this program here, they're going to start tolling the roads. Give them a little bit of a description of what that means, because it's not like you're going to be in line at a toll booth and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Talk about how this plan would work moving forward potentially.
Well, two things. At this point, we're not talking about tolling existing lanes of roads. What we're talking about is using tolls to build new lanes, either in new places or on existing roads, and under that scheme, you can only toll after the construction is completed. So, if we say we'll take I-65 south of Indianapolis and make it 6 lanes all the way to Louisville, you would do that construction. You would issue bonds for it most likely, and then Once that those additional lanes north and south are added, then there would be a toll for to pay for those additional lanes. And of course, everywhere you go over a stream, you've got to add an additional bridge.
Right.
And you would use new technology. You can do it right now. I've got one, an Easy Pass that connects to a transmitter at the toll booth. So you just go right through, and then you're sent a bill for the toll after the fact. So you're not sitting in long lines at a toll booth, you know, exchanging money.
Right, and you don't have to prepay anything or do anything like that, correct?
Yeah, and you can prepay. You can put money on there so it just charges it, or you can pay when the bill comes.
And for those of you who are just going to visit grandma's house.
You know, a few dollars.
right. But again, you don't have to stop. It doesn't slow down commerce. It doesn't bottle up the system.
And that's what they're using on the two new bridges across the Ohio River in the Louisville area, is implemented that technology.
And obviously that's been in use in the East Coast and Chicago for years and years and years, so most people are somewhat familiar with how all that works. Kevin Briniger is our guest this morning. He's the president and CEO of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. Here in Bloomington, education is near and dear to their hearts as well. What's going on with the I-STEP, and how about pre-kindergarten funding as well?
Well, with the I-STEP, there will be a new test. It is right now the working title. Is an acronym called ILEARN. We will probably have I-STEP for one more year as this new assessment is developed. The new assessment is designed to be shorter, to provide teachers with better diagnostic information, and hopefully avoid some of the pitfalls, particularly on the test administration side of the ledger that the I-STEP test suffered from. And then on pre-K, there are differences between the House and Senate versions. The House and the governor would like to double the existing program from $10 million a year to 20 and expand the counties. Right now it's limited to only five counties in the state. The Senate didn't go quite that far, quite frankly, and they address the eligibility in a little bit different way. We prefer the House version at a minimum, or we'd like to see the legislature go even further than the additional $10 million a year, and we're going to be pushing for that during these final 2 weeks of the session.
Yeah, I'm not sure how we can say that's a bad deal. If you don't get kids started off on the right foot, I don't care what party you vote for. That just sounds like a bad idea.
I refer to it as closing the preparation gap between those kids whose families can afford a quality education-oriented preschool experience and those families who cannot. And the example I use is my own children, who are now 25 and 22 in college and graduate school. And when they entered kindergarten, they'd already spent 3 years in a Methodist preschool. Now, there's a big difference between their level of preparation to start school off on the right foot and a child that has spent those same 3 years sitting on grandma's couch watching The Price is Right.
Right. And from not only from an educational standpoint, a behavior standpoint, a social standpoint, the positives so outweigh the other. It's amazing that some people drag their feet on this and say that's a bad idea, or it's because when we're talking about $600 million here and $1.2 billion here, you have $10 million, and that drives me crazy. But it's not about me. But it's good that you guys are arguing in the same court, because it's just you can only get one start. It's like the first impression. You can only get one first. Well, you should start them a little bit.
That's a good analogy. It's a very, very good analogy.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Did you have a good weekend?
Yeah. I've got a couple acres, so we have a lot of grass to mow, and we're getting some flowers out. And then whenever I could, I'd find a reason to sneak back in the house and watch the Masters.
Oh, I said earlier this morning. That's why.
On a bathroom break or something.
Yeah. The 25-minute bathroom break. I've been there and done that.
Yeah.
You got to
see whether they make this putt or not.
Exactly right. There was some great drama yesterday, and I flaked out, so I've got to get my I'm going to pay the price a little bit later this afternoon. Kevin Briniger is our guest this morning, president and CEO of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce, Bloomington native, and just a couple weeks here left. You mentioned the 21st is going to be wrap-up time. Is there enough time to get this done? They know what the cutoff date is. They make it get done, yeah. Right?
Absolutely. They start from the end date and work their way back. And I know that there was a lot of activity on the budget and probably some work on the revenue forecast that took place over the weekend at the State House. So it's a busy time for the legislators and the legislative staff, which I used to staff the Senate Finance Committee years ago. And, this is a busy time. And they're tired. They want to go home. And so, they'll work hard to get it done and get it done on time. And their legislative colleagues are counting on them, those that are directly working on the budget and the transportation infrastructure bill, these other key bills, their colleagues are counting on them to get it done on time so that they can all go home and take a break and get back to their jobs and their families and their lives. This is a real sacrifice and kind of an intense situation that we have with a part-time legislature and who have other jobs and other responsibilities.
Sure.
It's a big sacrifice on their part.
Is there anything, before we let you go, is there anything that would, and I know you've seen a lot over the years, should we expect any surprises or any last-minute compromises that might jump off the page and make you scratch your head?
Well, I think the big surprise this year has been the situation around cold beer and the Rickers convenience stores opening up, adding restaurants to a couple of their convenience stores and getting appropriately licensed to sell alcohol and cold beer both in the restaurant and of course with the restaurant license you can sell it to go as well. And that's caused quite an uproar with the liquor stores and the legislators. So I'd say that's the big surprise this year. Certainly anything is possible, and they've got some big differences to negotiate out in the budget and in the transportation infrastructure bill and the pre-K bill, but I know the people well and personally from working with them around the legislature, and I know they're committed to getting this done, and they're good people, and they'll sit down and work out their differences here over the next 2 weeks.
And that's that has been an interesting one from being in that business a long time ago. Well, not a long time ago here, kind of recently. But everybody's got a loophole somewhere or there, and fair play to Rickers for figuring it out. I know that hasn't made a lot of people happy, including my old buddy Patrick Tam. We grew up right next to each other. So
No, I'm sure his blood pressure has been up here lately. But the fact of the matter is, Rick, and it's been acknowledged by the legislators, that Rickers followed all the rules, they met all the requirements, they trained their staff, they had the right seating capacity, they had the right level of food sales versus alcohol sales to meet the requirements to get the permit. They were given the permit by the ATC, we believe appropriately, but it's caused an uproar because liquor stores certainly want to desperately protect their monopoly on cold beer sales.
And that's we'll leave that one for you and me over a cold beer someday. We could go on and on this
program. That sounds like a good strategy.
And I bet in a couple of weeks, probably around April 23rd, you'll be ready for one after the session wraps itself up. Hey, can we get caught up with you after it ends?
I think April 23rd is Sunday, so we won't be able to buy it.
We'll
at a restaurant.
That's right.
We'll find someplace.
We'll have to go to a microbrewery or a winery and play by those rules as well. Let's get caught up at the end of the month and kind of look back on how this all wrapped up to see how your crystal ball panned out.
That'd be great. I look forward to it.
All right, Kevin, always appreciate your time. Happy Monday. Glad you enjoyed the Masters. Glad you got your yard cut. I'm jealous. And we'll get caught up here in a couple of weeks.
All right. Look forward to it. Take care.
Thanks, buddy.